And gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome to this edition of the Hagman Report. Doug Hagman, Joe Hagman, something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. I want to welcome everyone into tonight's broadcast on this Monday, November 6th, 2017. Off of a weekend, just an incredible weekend in terms of, well, the chaos that exists on the streets of America, off of a week that saw a terrorist attack, of course, in New York City, and then, of course, on Sunday, the horrific bloodshed in a small Texas town. And it, just think about the how being in that town, and how everyone really in that town is affected by what happened. There's no getting around it. Everyone was touched in that town. It would be like the town, 362 residents, according to the latest census or the latest tax rolls for that town, and nearly 10% of the town wiped out. Think about that. And of course, Vegas, Las Vegas, from October 1st, and we can go on and on. But, you know, there's another side to all of this. There's the corruption side that's not getting much airplay. And we talk about, for example, on this show, we talk about Sean Hannity and his coverage of the corruption, the Clinton corruption. And the reason I bring his name up, in fact, he just retweeted a an article by Peter Chowka on our Twitter feed, but he's relevant to this discussion because, just like America being the final speed bump on the globalist road to takeover, I would say Sean Hannity in the corporate media is a speed bump in the total takeover of the corporate media. But when you pull the lens back and you look at what's taking place all across of our country, whether it's the chaos or whether it is the corruption, think about how many hearings, Senate intelligence hearings, various other committees within the Senate and the House that have conducted these inquiries, these hearings. What has ever become of the suspected perpetrators of fraud, of crimes, of criminal activity, of treason, of sedition? Not much, I dare say. Have you stopped, ever thought why, you know, why there's nothing? Why no perp walks? Why no disposition? This is an area that interests me a great deal. And to that extent, Tom Horn has written a book titled Saboteurs and addresses this very issue. And Steve Quayle has been talking about this forever, since the first day on radio. And this rather long introduction, I think, was necessary to just paint the picture, set the tenor for tonight, for tonight's broadcast. Because what we're seeing is something that even in the, well, certainly the mainstream captured corporate mass media, they will not touch. But even in the new, the honest, the alternative media, it's misunderstood, understated even, and that is the spiritual component to what we're seeing. The incredible secret Masonic, if you will, the secret society aspect to what we're seeing. No one will touch that with a 10-foot pole. Many mock it. Many say it doesn't exist. I got my first education about this from Steve Quayle. I received additional education about this from Dr. Tom Horn, as well as others. But these two luminaries, these two professionals in their, at the top of their game today, and have been at the top of their game for so many months and years, are here to discuss this very issue. The saboteurs within, the enemy within. And Joe and I here are just anxiously awaiting to what they've got to say. And I've got to say that Steve's books and Tom's latest work, you know, you talk about a PhD education, you'll get them with both of the resources both of them offer. Tonight's broadcast in part brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. That's ZipRecruiter.com for just a fantastic deal right now where our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. More on that later. But without any further ado, Joe, let's bring our guests in. Joe, I'll toss it to you. Let's bring our guests in.
Yeah, we have Steve Quayle from SteveQuayle.com and Tom Horn, SkywatchTV.com. And go to SkywatchTVStore.com for the deal on saboteurs. It's on there, and there's a great deal where you can not only get that, but other books such as...
I learned so much from that show.
Gods and Thrones, The Deeper State, and Shadow Hand. Tom Horn and Steve Quayle. Steve, I'm going to bring you on first.
Well, thank you, and I think tonight's going to be a true eye-opener for everyone, because I don't believe that anybody has done the research of the roots of what we're seeing right now. We all have to deal with the fruits, whether it's the shooting in Texas, the shootings all over the country, the false flags. Everybody has to deal with that. But it's one thing to deal with the fruit of evil. It's another thing to identify with the root of evil. Now, we're going to get into the book Saboteurs, and I want to give everyone a definition of sabotage, because obviously sabotage is an act. Saboteurs are those who are in the process of sabotaging. The word sabotage means to deliberately destroy, damage, or obstruct something. What we're watching, Doug and Tom, as you guys know, is obstruction of justice. And for the record, I don't believe there is any justice at this point. And it also means to vandalize, to wreck, to damage, destroy, cripple, impair, incapacitate, obstruct, disrupt, spoil, ruin, undermine, threaten, and subvert. That sounds like the Democratic platform, and this is a real statement, because we're going to talk tonight about the spirit behind this, not to mention the cowardly Republicans. So in essence, what we're talking about is the entire process of light versus dark. I'm going to say one more statement and turn it over to my great friend Tom Horn, and just again, this is important. This is the most important time, I think, Doug, as we're coming out of very horrible events, going into even more horrific events. And never in the history, I wrote this down, of the world have so many events happen on such an accelerating basis. Battle lines are drawn, financial, geological, astronomical, racial, political, religious, treason in the open, massive cover-ups of false flag government-initiated terror. And let me say this, we're watching too as thousands of Trojan horses have been allowed into this country to sabotage this great nation. And therefore, Tom will identify the saboteur. Hey, Tom, wonderful to be with you tonight.
Hey, great to be with you too, Steve. Of course, you know, on the following the eve of our mighty conference there in the middle of Branson that you put together, holy smokes, man. I've not heard anything but very, very positive reports. You had people that came from all over the world. You had 40-some countries of people that were watching via live streaming. It was a real opportunity to talk to the whole world, and kudos to you, my good friend, about what a great job you did putting that together. And it was great to also get to meet Doug. You know, it's funny, Doug, after all the programs that we've done together, but that was the first time you and I had actually had a chance to meet face-to-face, and it was wonderful.
You know what, Tom, and I'm not kidding about this, honestly, it was like being in the presence of royalty there, you among them, and it was such a great... folks, Tom Horn, I'm going to say this. What a fantastic... man, Tom and his wife, and they're just incredible people, as are Steve and his wife. But I've learned so much, and that weekend, was just a fabulous time. I'm not gonna take any more time, but thank you for all you, both of you do. You cannot, folks, you cannot believe the work that goes into the end result, end product of both Steve Quayle and Tom Horn. Go ahead,
well,
sir.
Well, that also goes to you, Doug, and maybe later in the show we should talk. Steve and I would like to try to do something to try to help you raise the money for your budget. So I know we don't want to bring it up right now, but maybe in the middle of the program or sometime, because people don't realize often what a role that you and the Hagman Report and Joe are playing in bringing the truth to power around this subject matter that the media elite won't touch with a 10-foot pole. You mentioned Hannity. He's one of the few guys out there that is trying to turn over some of these stones, you know, to reveal what's actually going on with the continued push towards a globalist mindset. And we'll get into all of that this evening, but I want people to know that the Hagman Report is one of the very few out there that certainly deserves people's support to whatever extent they can to try to keep you on the air. And so let's talk about that a little bit later. I didn't mean to jump off subject, but since you're bringing up how important what Steve and I do, even more so what the Hagman Report does.
Well, thank you, sir.
And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to know that I believe, and Tom, you were there when Doug was brought up on the stage. I asked people who were there because of hearing about it, the Branson Conference, but also all the different speakers that we had put on the weeks before Branson. I would say 90% of the people stood.
Right.
And so, again, tonight, Tom and I, in the second hour or so, are going to stand with Doug. And I want to make this point really quick, Tom, so I don't forget, because God knows I'm all over the place and I'm trying harder to stand point. But I want 10 pastors who have taken the threat against churches to email me if you have the cojones to take a concealed weapons permit class. I will pay you up to $100 each to take that class from someone who is a trainer. You are shepherds, men of God, and you are shepherds to protect your flock. And no bloody wolf with an attitude from Antifa, whatever it is, whoever claims they've got a gripe or I can't use that word, or a complaint against the people of God, you have an obligation. So you need to send me steve777@stevequayle.com and just send me a picture of your church, tell me how many people you have in your congregation, and if you're willing to take your sheep's life as a command from the Lord to protect your sheep, okay, then you send me it, and I'll get you $100 overnight or, you know, within a couple days. So thank you, Tom. I'll give it back to you. But I just want to say that I take this serious. For those of you who went to Branson, my number one concern, number one, is that you would be safe. And there was so many security there, I think, Tom, that everyone felt really safe, because to the degree that God enabled us, we had, by the grace of God, all bases covered. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, yeah, we absolutely did. I mean, you went over and above, as you know, because you've been to our studio and even to my home. Security is a big thing. Everybody around us has concealed carry, but we also have former law enforcement that work for us full-time. We take it very seriously. It's unfortunate that we live at a time in American history when we have to think so much that way, but we do, and it is a responsibility for every shepherd of every flock. And that was one of the things that I very much appreciated about the Branson Conference, was we had security on the outside of the building. You couldn't even get in the building if you were carrying any kind of a handbag larger than a small purse. You still had to go through all the metal detections and other detection systems. And then the inside, you had a veritable army of people, including some of the top security personnel that cover some of the biggest events and television icons in the nation. And I was very happy to see that, and I know that everybody inside that building was happy to see that as well. In fact, I noticed when you were speaking, and I'm sure the guy didn't mean anything by it, but a guy got up and walked towards you with his iPhone going to take a picture, and there was security on him in a lightning bolt and backed him up and made him go sit back down. And I know people there love that. Well, look, the whole thing that the book Saboteurs, I did not intend to write this. It partly grew out of the phenomenon that is the Trump presidency. And then at around the same time, some of the revelations that were made in the WikiLeaks emails, we can touch some of those this evening, put me on the course for an investigation that basically draws back the curtain on the saboteurs, which you so well defined a moment ago, starting with January 20, 2017, the very, you know, the president's acceptance speech. And if you go back now, people can Google this and go and read it. And if you didn't watch it live, go and read this amazing presidential acceptance speech where Donald Trump is standing up there. He's got George Bush and Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, the former president, sitting right behind him, who would soon be squirming in their seats, as you had, you know, newly elected U.S. President Donald Trump. And no matter whether you like him or not, by the way, he spoke straightforwardly in that speech to establishment, bureaucratic, deep state, shadow government elite, in a way that we had never heard before, and he made it very clear that his Make America Great Again agenda had not ended on the campaign trail, and that he had gathered there on the west front of the Capitol to announce more than the orderly and peaceful transition of power from the Obama administration to his. He made it very clear that his objective was to take the power of Washington, D.C. away from the establishment types and to give it back to the people. And as I was sitting there that evening, my jaw open, Nita and I watching his acceptance speech, I realized a couple of things. One, to the illumined elite, this inaugural address was, number one, a clear salvo that drew a line in the sand, right? And we've seen how they've reacted ever since then. But the second thing that was on my mind that evening was how historians to historians and scholars, you know, the Donald was soon going to learn a lesson, and he's been learning it since, and that is pulling the drain from the plug in the swamp in Washington is a whole lot easier said than done, right? And that's because of something that an awful lot of Americans simply don't understand. People elect a president based on his campaign promises and his campaign speeches, with the idea that they're going to send him to Washington. Mr. Smith goes to Washington, right? They're going to send him to Washington, and he's going to go in there and begin immediately establishing the objectives for which they elected him president. But most Americans don't realize that an election doesn't have very much to do with how modern Washington entrenched cross-party monopoly and establishment actually function. Every 4 years, we elect a president, or we re-elect one, and then he selects his cabinet, federal appointees that are supposed to oversee the executive departments like the Secretary of Agriculture and Commerce and Defense and Energy and Health and Human Services and Homeland Security and all that. But for the people inside the Beltway, they know that the real government of the United States is not the Congress, is not the president, it's not the court, it's not the Constitution, it's what is called the federal bureaucracy, what some people call the fourth branch of government, which influences all of the constitutional three branches of government that most voters perceive are there functioning to serve we the people, the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. The bureaucracy is basically 3.5 million people that are immersed in the whole liberal D.C. culture and ideology. They're globalists. They have a globalist objective that's been nurtured over a long period of time. And these people actually view things like the U.S. borders. A moment ago, I forget exactly the term you used, Steve, but basically you're saying that there are plants that are being entrenched all across the United States, and all of our intel right now tells us that they're in every state in the Union. They're like a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. God only knows if they're planning for a day of jihad here in America and what tools, including weapons of mass destruction, they might have to bring that to pass. Donald Trump, with his whole speech about building a wall and all of his efforts so far to impede unmitigated immigration into the United States. This whole thing recently, the terrorist activity before yesterday's terrorist activity, where the guy, what do they call it? It's a lottery, right? And you get this lottery, you get to come into the United States with bypassing some of the typical security protocols for immigrating into the United States. But in any case, the federal bureaucracy is made up of multinational corporations that support the globalist agenda. These 2.5 million employees, actually more than that, 2.6, 2.7 million employees, these are career government personnel. They work with the press, the fake news, as Donald Trump calls them. And these are people that perceive America's Judeo-Christian morality and its historical emphasis on the kind of rugged individualism that Doug was talking about at the opening of this program. Free market capitalism, which is dying a quick death now that most recent polls show now a small majority of Americans and a much greater majority of millennials actually prefer socialism over free market capitalism. Well, this is all that they hope to aspire. And right now, if they can't impeach President Trump or encourage somebody to take him out, which is some of the terrible stuff some of the comedians have been doing, showing his head chopped off, and one of the rappers' new album now shows his grave where he's been assassinated and all that crap. If they can't encourage some crazy person like the shooter that was in the church there yesterday to somehow assassinate him, then their plan is to basically oppose any and everything about the Make America Great Again agenda and wait him out, and in 3 years from now get him out of office so that they can, you know, reassume their globalist march towards a totalitarianistic type of world government. So, and now add to that, by the way, something else that's unprecedented, and that is how and this has never happened before, it's unprecedented, the former president, Obama, who immediately went across town and set up bunkers just 2 miles from the White House where he and his Organizing for Action associates, and their 250 offices nationwide, have commenced efforts to effectively function as what in the Capitol, some in the Capitol Beltway are already calling a shadow government third-term pseudo-presidency. And so Obama, I think, Rush Limbaugh has made this point, Hannity has made this point, he has raced back to his early station as a radical Saul Alinsky-style agitation organizer. And you can see the events that between him and Soros, manufactured chaos that they're trying to bring to the streets. Thank God their whole Antifa, or is that how you say it? I'm not an expert on the language.
Yeah, I think that's good, yeah. Antifa, but let's just call them what they are, communists.
Yeah, that their whole thing this last week was a big fizzle, and hopefully that will continue to be the facts. But this is, it's all organized. And for those that don't know, Alinsky, the 1960s radical who wrote the book Rules for Radicals, and by whom Obama was guided, he's the guy that wrote this playbook. If you read his book, I've read it, he says in the beginning, the organizer's first job is to create chaos, to create issues, create perceived problems, and that through creating problems, you'll cause people, the average person, to become frustrated, to feel defeated, to feel lost, to feel futureless, as if the country isn't being guided in the proper way. And so they turn away from whatever the prevailing system is, and they're willing to let go of the past and chance the future. That's his whole scheme. Well, that's the playbook that those who oppose Trump are using today to create the appearance of issues and problems and a general sense of desperation among millennials in particular, who have been deprived, in American history education, in the education systems today, mostly all they get is, revised versions of our past. And even now we're trying to wipe out that, you know, tear down the statues, forget what we did in the past, tear down everything so that people won't realize what we overcame and how we became that nation that was the product of the so-called great generation. But to get them to turn away from all of that, to look to you for solutions. And so over the last decade in particular, the two Obama terms and part of the Bush term, the second Bush term, there's been an effort that's been literally manufactured to divide Americans through class warfare and all the rest of it, to create this general sense of desperation in order that certain politicians and elites can then extend themselves as the answer for this chaos. That's total Saul Alinsky book of rules. And I don't believe, by the way, you mentioned this guy that shot the people in that church yesterday, I don't think it's a stretch to say that some blame has to be laid at the feet of these Saul Alinsky agitators for things like this 26-year-old Devin Kelly taking a gun in the First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs and killing as many as, my last count was 26 people, I think, not counting the fact that 27 if you count the baby inside the pregnant woman that was murdered. Mentally unstable individuals like that are being encouraged by the media, by these paid agitators that are drawing money from Soros to stand up and to campaign as if they even have a clue what they're marching against, which most of the time they don't. But it encourages these crazy people, unbalanced people, and terrorists to take out their misery on those that they disagree with philosophically, politically, in terms of religion, including and especially hatred that is targeted towards Christians. And that is partly because, by the way, Alinsky dedicated his book to Lucifer. And that's the reason why when I say the shadow government being operated by Obama out of Washington, D.C. today is at its core Luciferian, radical, and inspired by those that would follow the examples of Lucifer. It's that influence. By the way, anybody that reads my new book, Saboteurs, you know, when you get past the first chapter that deals with a lot of this stuff, like, you know, the federal bureaucracy and why the wheels don't turn very fast in Washington, D.C., but you'll notice in that book that very quickly I get past all of that, past the flesh and blood, as the New Testament might describe it, to the supernatural darkness that's at work behind the scenes in Washington, D.C. today, because I believe that that's where the real nefarious activity is operating in order to create a new world order under a totalitarian leader that the Bible calls the Antichrist. And that, of course, is where even some of the recent discoveries in WikiLeaks, uncovered efforts by occultists in Washington, D.C., who certainly thought that that election was going to turn out differently, and I think maybe God put his foot on the brakes to give us a chance at a different outcome. Maybe a Second Chronicles 7:14 opportunity. If my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and I will forgive their sins and I will heal their land. Maybe right now we have a short window of opportunity to do that, don't you think?
Well, I think, you know, I want to address that too, Tom, because from the standpoint of when you and I first starting on radio together, however many, it's almost decades now, you know, we were talking about the gates of hell being opened. More and more people, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who have listened to Tom Horn, myself, those different guests that Doug and Joe have had on this show, we've been warning and warning, and the gates of hell are not a metaphor as the backsliding, you know, denialists that are in the puke pits. A puke pit is what used to be a pulpit, and now it all is so lukewarm it's just a vomit factory. That's me. But I want to share something, Tom. You brought it up. Now, here's the 13th rule. Sounds like I should, you know, good book title. In Saul Alinsky, who was a Luciferian, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Cut off the support network and isolate the target from sympathy. Go after people and not institutions. People hurt faster than institutions. Now, this is amazing, ladies and gentlemen, because this is what we're watching. Now, back to the supernatural. I have maintained, Doug, you've heard me say it, those of you who have heard me maybe say it too many times, but I don't believe people still get it. You can quote Ephesians 6, where we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, powers, spiritual wickedness, and heavenly places, until you're blue in the face, but until you're confronted with it, you know, it's just basically something that hasn't been actualized or realized in the believer's life. What I believe about the book Saboteurs, which is so critical, is Tom lays out for you the root of evil. Remember this, when Jesus, passed by the fig tree that, there was no fruit on, he didn't just say, fruit, there's no figs, but he cursed it from the roots, and the next time the disciples came by the same fig tree, it had dried up from the roots. Until the people of God understand the spiritual nature of warfare, until they begin to take their, and I would say this, operational and functional authority, which Jesus gave to his disciples, then further signed off on the power of God at Pentecost, I think that people are absolutely going to be like sheep led to the slaughter, and are being sheep led to the slaughter. Unfortunately, puke pits and churches were never meant to be, what are they called, arboretums, where they slaughter cattle or slaughter sheep. The point being, Tom, is that it is critical. There is no pulling back. You know, sometimes I know you feel this way, and I know I felt this way, and Doug, you and Joe certainly feel this way, is that it's this whole listening to us or listening to whoever your guests are or you, this isn't for entertainment. It's to provoke to action. And it's provoke, you know, by provocation I mean this, to prod you to understand, number one, first and foremost, who you are in Jesus, but second of all, the nature of the battle. What we're seeing now in government, and by the way, it was interesting, on the shooter, you guys, I don't know if you saw this story, but the Air Force failed to notify the FBI that this guy had been dishonorably discharged. Now, with the Jeopardy music playing in the background, okay, that's normal operating procedure. All I'd want to know is who was in charge of that and who didn't do it. My point is this. When the entire military, with exception, forgive me, when the majority of the military, with exception, has been placed in by a known open Luciferian president, when the entire intelligence apparatus, when the entire State Department, when in the entire, if you will, legislative, judicial, and executive, those who help, are all basically of the same ilk, the point is that how can people expect a political solution to a spiritual problem? Enter Saboteurs. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. Well, and listen, this isn't just us Christians that would understand what you're talking about. Occultists understand this, but probably actually more. You said people can quote, you know, Ephesians 6:12 until they're blue in the face, and a lot of Christians do, but who never really either understand what they're quoting or believe in it. And more of our inner church polls are showing that most people who go to church in America today in Americanized Christianity. And that, well, most of them don't read the Bible, but for those that go to church and hear the word spoken or can quote a particular proof text or something like that, they don't really believe in it anyway. Most of them no longer even believe in the divinity of Christ. The majority no longer believe in the inspiration of the Scripture. So they're impotent. They're without power. They're without authority. So, you know, the sons of Sceva can come up and say, I adjure you by this Jesus whom Paul preaches, and get the thunder beat out of them, right? Paul I know, Jesus I know, but who are you, right? Just because you can quote certain things or say certain names doesn't mean anything. So I find it ironic that it's actually people in the occult that are stronger believers in supernaturalism than what most people in Americanized Christianity today, at least if you can believe the polls, are, you know, not as strong a believer. And so I thought it was kind of interesting that I was, in fact, I was writing about this or wrote about it in the book Saboteurs, but I was also reading about it again a couple of days ago about the French Revolution. And one of the things that stood out to me was how the occultists during the French Revolution believed that very powerful non-human energies, evil energies, were emanating from their thought memes, their words, their contagious ideas. So as I'm explaining this, think about what is going on with the organizing for action agitators and the Soros agitators, and what they're doing out there on America's university and college campuses today, where they're, you know, setting fires and blaspheming God and trying to create whatever kind of chaos they can, because they're snowflakes and they're completely, you know, unhappy with the way the election turned out. Some people also call this, by the way, the Peter Pan syndrome. I saw an article on that the other day, where kids don't want to grow up. They just want to sit at home and play Nintendo and live off the benefits of the great generation. That's why so many of them want socialism, because even though it may not be very much money, in fact, it's going to be a kind of slavery, at least they don't have to get up and do anything, right? Or at least that's the way they think it's going to be. If they understand that the Antichrist is actually going to create a socialist system that is going to imprison everybody on planet Earth, that's actually what they're working towards. But in any case, these thought memes, the contagious ideas, the conversations that are taking place in the streets right now among these agitators, and then, of course, the symbols that they use, some of them using incantations, where they're saying the same verses, if you will, over and over and over again. During the French Revolution, the occultists understood that this was a way they could initiate a kind of supernatural evil through collective mind think, through group mind. And what they believed was that as people passed forward the thought forms that they were creating, the memes from one person to another, and then those ideas would go viral, the power and the reach of the entity that they were energizing would spread like an unseen presence. It would grow like an unseen presence. You remember that old movie many years ago? I think it was called, Mysterious World or something like that, where Robbie the Robot was first presented. But the scientists found this abandoned laboratory where the aliens that had died bazillions of years earlier had wiped themselves out because they had created a machine that would cause the id. Remember that?
Yeah, it was called Forbidden Planet with Walter Pidgeon.
Forbidden Planet. There you go. Yeah. Well, that presence grows and it is fed by these thought forms until it becomes an unimaginably destructive force. Well, so writing about the Masonic involvement in the French Revolution, Gary Lachman, who, and this is where I was reading about this, in his book Politics and the Occult, he made this extraordinary, important observation that stood out to me about how these immaterial destructive forces that had unseen plans of their own had been released as a result of occult politics in the French Revolution, because remember, a large part of the French Revolution was out to do away with God, do away with religion. They put the big nude statue of the naked woman, you know, on the top of the altar in the Church of Notre Dame, 20,000 people being killed in the guillotines. They were out to literally destroy the idea of God. Well, let me just give you this quick quote from the book. He says this, quote, Cazotte himself was aware of the dangerous energies unleashed by the revolution. Although he didn't use the term, he would no doubt have agreed that whatever started it, the revolution soon took on a life of its own, coming under the power of an egregory, which is Greek for watcher, a kind of immaterial entity that is created by and presides over a human activity or collective. According to the anonymous author of the fascinating Meditations on the Tarot, there are no good egregories, only negative ones. True or not, egregories can nevertheless be engendered by the collective will and imagination of nations. As Jocelyn Godwin points out, an egregory is augmented by human belief, ritual, and especially by sacrifice. Now, I want to say something about that in a moment. Continue, quote, if it is sufficiently nourished by such energies, The egregore can take on a life of its own and appear to be an independent personal divinity with limited power on behalf of its devotees and an unlimited appetite for their future devotion. If, as some esotericists believe, human conflicts are the result of spiritual forces for spiritual ends, and these forces are not all good, then collective catastrophes like the French Revolution take on a different significance, end quote. Isn't that fascinating? But he really nails it, and he's writing this from a completely secularist point of view.
Well, I think you've got the word you use is fascinating, because the Grigori, G-R-I-G-O-R-I, also known as the Watchers, the mysterious Eighth Order of Angels. And what's interesting is those are obviously the ones that were even, bound, and they're singing. You can see this in the Book of Enoch, but the word, and boy, does this make Catholics mad, and I'm not saying it to make Catholics mad, but Gregorian chants, people say that, well, that was Pope Gregory. I got to tell you something. It absolutely precedes Pope Gregory by millennia. So when we're talking about that, Tom, it's interesting because the very word, the Gregory, and the word you used, you know, in that quote, is we're talking right again about supernatural entities, and we're talking about supernatural evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's using a derivation of the spelling. He's talking about exactly the same thing. He calls it an egregore, but there's two or three ways to spell the same thing. I just thought it was interesting that he also makes the case that we're actually talking about the same thing as a fallen watcher. We're talking about a very powerful fallen angelic presence, but that in any case, the occultists themselves were fully aware that they were energizing this invisible entity, and that as they spread their thought forms, their mind forms, their contagious memes from person to person, and the attitudes and the sentiments grew on the streets, they were actually giving life to a growing evil supernaturalism whose intent, of course, was the destruction not only of France, but of the people that died in the guillotines and the rest of it. Now, another thing, and I won't quote anymore, but another thing that he went on to talk about, and I talk about this even more so in the book Saboteurs, is how these occultists, and obviously the Gregories or egregories, understand, is that, and this was reflected in the WikiLeaks emails too, the discoveries, and that is that the blood and the pain of innocent persons, so you most likely are usually here talking about children because, you know, from the Liber of Aleister Crowley, it's the pain of a child or the blood of a child that has a greater level of supernatural influence in the invisible world. But this could also be, an adult, both male or female, who are inflicted with pain, and it's pain that feeds the monster. And so notice how at the same time you have all this stuff going on the street, is it a coincidence that all of a sudden we're discovering stuff that Steve Quayle's been talking about for a long time, and that's what's going on in Hollywood? I saw yesterday Michelle Pfeiffer, you might have saw her being quoted, where she said that it isn't just a few women in the Weinstein situation. She said every single woman she knows in Hollywood, therefore that would have to include her, I guess, she said has been sexually abused or harassed. Now, if you combine that with all that is coming out now about pedophilism, what we're witnessing is a dam bursting on one of the biggest cover-ups in American history. But don't forget that it was on this very program, the Hagman Report, that towards the end of last year and very early in 2017, we were discussing numerous situations having to do with the Podesta brothers and how different bloggers and conspiracy sites, so-called conspiracy sites, typically that means the people that are actually telling the truth, right? But in 2016 and early 2017, they were speaking out on the so-called Pizzagate revelation that inferred that underage children were in fact being trafficked for use by very powerful political and Hollywood underworld figures. And of course, a lot of the sites at that time were connecting that to Bill and Hillary Clinton. It didn't help that the WikiLeaks emails included one in which John Podesta talks openly in his private email, but he's talking openly to the person he's sending the email to about his close relationship with former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert, who, of course, was sent to prison for 15 months after sexually abusing boys. And in fact, the judge called him a serial child molester. And now Hastert, you know, he was released not long ago after serving a little over a year of that sentence. He was directly linked in these WikiLeaks emails to dozens of these different references to pizza. It was right at 150 different emails. And so if this wasn't some kind of coded language, then, brother, these people really, 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 really liked pizza, right?
Yeah, but they love blood, you know, they love the blood and sacrifice. And it goes back to, Tom, just like we said, the best definition I ever got, I believe it was given to me, and take this to the Lord in prayer, ladies and gentlemen, but years ago, I asked the Lord, what's the definition of lust? And he said, the appetite of demons expressed through humans. And so when we talk about bloodlust, we're talking about the Bible says the life is in the blood. And so literally, the blood of the innocent. And just remember this, that obviously Abel's blood, cried out from the ground, you know, and when Cain slew him, and there's even the harmonics of blood. Literally, everybody's bloodstream has a different, if you will, what I call song of creation, just like their DNA. But the idea is this, Tom, this is one of my, and I'm sorry, I'm going to take one of my infamous right-hand turns, but the point is the fact that the church was silent, that which professes itself in the biggest and the baddest, you know, maybe you know more, you're probably, certainly do know more about mainstream, what they're saying, what I call claimants to churchianity, that the uproar was not there. There was a minor, let's say, noise made, but it's the same thing. When that which claimed to be followers of the Lord Jesus Christ wouldn't stand up for the aborted, they don't understand the very power that is now coming against them was due to the sacrifice. And even Christians didn't read the sacrament of abortion, where the people doing the abortion, and Satan said, basically, I'll paraphrase, you Christians are so dumb, you don't understand what we're doing. The bottom line, we're deriving the power from the shed blood of the innocents to destroy you at the correct time. And I maintain to people that, you know, that basically go to what I call wishy-washy worship places, they're in for big trouble, because there's coming a point, I think very soon, where people, if they're presented with the truth, as you're doing in saboteurs, they're presented with all of the different events taking place in the world, and they don't see the unseen hand of Lucifer, then there's nothing that we can basically do except just pray, God, somehow open up literally the portals to hell and give everybody a good glimpse, because that portal to hell is going to be what brings hell on earth. Go ahead. Or is bringing hell on earth.
Well, you know, one of the things that I loved at the conference in Branson was the number of times you and I both had people who came up to us and they said, we want you to sign this book for our teenage daughter or for our teenage son who couldn't be here. I had a college guy come up and he said, you guys literally turned my life around. I had walked away from God. And that was the biggest blessing to me, to know that we were reaching out to these young people who, I was actually kind of surprised by it, right? They dig Steve Quayle. They dig Tom. I was shocked, amazed, pleasantly happy to know that there is innocent blood out there that is listening to you and I. Now, I said that to say this, because I've been telling people that the book Saboteurs is not for children. This is not one that you want to get and give to your teenage daughter or son. And it's because I go further in this book than I have in others, in which I get down to the nitty-gritty, and I talk about some of the details. We was talking a moment ago about Pizzagate and, you know, how these different foods were a coded system for pedophiles. Hot dogs with pizza would equal a little boy. Pasta with pizza meant a little girl. Cheese was for a little girl, and so on. And that was partly why a conspiracy grew up around that those emails, because it became public knowledge that Tony Podesta, I read the other day where he was arrested and then released, so we're going to see where that's coming up, in some of the whole thing going. In fact, Doug would probably, you would know more about this, Doug and Steve, about his possible connections, collusion with Russia, some of the nuclear deals and stuff that were being made. But in any case, his occult pedophilia art collection, partly was raised.
Tom, let me just interject something. He's at the periphery of two separate Senate and House intelligence investigations, and then also at the periphery of the special counsel investigation as it relates to the alleged Russian collusion. However, I think the information about his detention might be a little bit more than speculative and wishful thinking. However, getting back to on track what you're saying about the art collection, we've done an extensive investigation, and the information that you have assembled is perhaps the best out there. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, it's very disturbing, I think it ties together with the idea of some of the co-conspirators who may in fact have been involved, not just with pedophilia in the sense of, who's the actor, the really well-known actor that in the last few days admitted that he might have gotten drunk and took advantage of a young Hollywood boy. What's his name? House of Cards, that guy.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah,
Kevin Spacey. Spaced Out. Call him Kevin Spaced Out.
Yeah, Kevin Spaced Out. That kind of activity, but something much darker in the sense that some of these children may have been absconded and never returned. They've disappeared. They're on posters at the post office today, where people are looking for them, and they're never going to be found again because there was some very dark stuff that could have been connected to some of these people that was going on in the circles of the Washington elite. And so what most people in the public, you know, they've read about the restaurant owner of Comet Ping Pong, James Elefantis. And I don't know how you can own a restaurant in Washington and be considered one of the top 50 most powerful people in Washington, D.C. So there's that's interesting. But that restaurant, Comet Ping Pong, is also mentioned a dozen or so times in these leaked emails. And by the way, that's for people who are listening to this program and that sounds familiar, that's where the guy named Edgar Welch, he went there with a gun and was arrested for taking his AR-15 rifle and a handgun back in December. And after he was arrested, he told the police he was there investigating a story about Pizzagate and Hillary Clinton running a child sex ring, literally out of the eatery. And then don't forget, now, there's some very, very strange stuff here. Several weeks after Welch was arrested, remember this, CBS 46 evening anchor Ben Swan, he was a really popular newscaster and an investigative journalist. He had his Truth in Media website. He had his Reality Check program. And I watched the program live when it happened. He had launched this investigation of the Pizzagate story. And he framed the location of the Comet Ping Pong as possibly connected with a child pornography ring that was being run out of Washington, D.C. And he questioned, and he actually raised some very good questions about why authorities had been unwilling to conduct a full investigation into allegations involving that pizza parlor and the one next to it. He pointed out how some of the music bands that were playing there were singing songs that joked about pedophilia. He showed all the artwork that matches known boy lover symbols that the FBI had actually published as part of their list. By the way, the Podesta emails also mention pizza and handkerchiefs, and that's noted code language according to the FBI for pedophiles. So there was some of that stuff that was also well known. And then he also pointed out how that, two doors over from Comet Ping Pong was the other pizza parlor named Besta Pizza, and their logo matched what the 2007 FBI report depicted as a unique symbol commonly used by pedophiles in order to identify one another to express their particular preferences in children, which is a winding triangle that stands for boy love. But remember, immediately after he gave that report, a couple of things happened. First of all, Besta Pizza modified its logo, but then things got really strange. Just a few days later, Swan's Truth in Media site suddenly disappeared. His Twitter account disappeared. His Instagram account disappeared. His Facebook account disappeared. And so you have to ask, did somebody tell him to back off? Was he threatened? Was it just his bosses telling him to quit the conspiracy-themed reporting? The reason that I raised the question is because our mutual friend Alex Jones, likewise, was somehow pressured into publicly apologizing for promoting commentary involving Pizzagate. Now, I'm only assuming that with Alex, who is a pretty brave guy, right, that he was just threatened by some kind of defamation suit, and probably the people inside the company said, look, this is just not a war we want to fight. And so he went, you know, on the air and said neither Mr. Elefantis nor his restaurant Comet Ping Pong were involved in any human trafficking that he was aware of. And then Hillary Clinton comes out and she tweets about Pizzagate when Michael Flynn was forced to resign, and rubbed that in his face and reminded him of how him and his son had once accused her of running a child sex ring out of Comet Ping Pong. And is it a coincidence that now they too are being targeted in the Mueller investigation? And I've read over the last few days that they too are likely to be charged. So There seems to be, on the one hand, evidence that certainly ought to be investigated by America's highest criminal investigative institutions. And yet, on the other hand, there seems to be fear. Somebody is causing people to back off and not say anything for what? Fear that they, too, could wind up like that, you know, who's this black woman right now that is out there saying that the Democratic Party was taken over by Hillary Clinton and
Donna Brazil.
Yeah, and Donna Brazil this week talking about how following who's this kid I'm trying to remember that died? He had some of the WikiLeaks information.
Seth Rich.
Murdered.
His name
What's
is Seth
name?
Rich.
Yeah. And she referenced him, and she said following that, she was afraid because she wanted to, she wanted to speak out on behalf of Bernie Sanders, and she wanted to speak out on against the Clinton family crime syndicate, and said that after he was mowed down, or after he was murdered, she became afraid for her life, closed the blinders in her house, she said, because she was afraid that snipers might try to take her out. So this is beyond, in other words, conspiracy, right? This is beyond little websites and guys trying to make something out of nothing when you have people that work inside Congress that are afraid for their life. So anyway, I do think, and like you say, Doug, I know we're getting ready to go to a break here, but like you say, in the book Saboteurs, I thoroughly investigated a lot of this information.
You did well, Tom. Tom, you did well, and we are skipping the top of the hour network break. We'll take the next network break at the top of next hour, just so you can continue this wonderful dissertation.
Well, I know you got to take commercial break.
Let me give you a break a minute. And again, you know, I think it's critical that we understand the, if you will, the point at which this country is at. Number one, there is no truth. And I think, you know, I want to give a scripture, not to quote, be a Bible beater, but to,